Hi again, and thanks for coming back to Jim Brown's Outrig Capercast. This is number 15, actually part 4 of a 4-part series on the comparisons between various seafaring watercraft types. In number 12, I spoke of the ancient vessels, everything from rafts and dugout canoes and up including the early multi-hulls, and how they all influenced the distribution of early man around the planet. And number 13 was about the early trading monohulls with their deep, burdensome hulls for carrying heavy cargoes like copper ingots and cannon, and how those sailing workboats have evolved into today's modern recreational sailing yachts with full-length keels and outside ballast. And that ballast weighing perhaps half as much as the rest of the vessel, and how those craft have now evolved in today's extreme racing monohulls with their extremely broad, flat, skimming dish hull forms fitted with very deep, knife-like keels, including great ballast bombs on the bottom of them, weighing perhaps 7 or 8, even 9 times more than the entire rest of the structure. All of that done to achieve stability by adding weight down deep. And at number 14, at last, I begin to speak of the multi-hulls and how they achieve stability by adding buoyancy out to the sides. I spoke of the differences between modern catamarans and trimarans and how that relates to their structures and configuration. And here in 15, I hope to continue with this catamaran-trimaran comparisons as to their riding motion, their accommodation, and their safety.
Okay, Jimmy. But that little review cost you 10% of your time allowance. Good grief, you'd better get going.
Okay, but you're the one that's wasting time. Anyway, I'd like to suggest that you, the listener, take the chance, if you ever get it, to jump from one boat to another on the same day in the same seaway. It's a rare opportunity, but I always try to make it happen. So if you can arrange to sail in 2 boats on the same day that are relatively equal in size and purpose, one a catamaran, the other a trimaran, you can definitely tell the difference in their riding motion. And after 50 years of designing and building and sailing both types, I think I understand why. Let's say that both boats are beating upwind against trade wind conditions, 15, 18 knots of wind, maybe 5, sometimes 7-foot seas, and these boats are sailing diagonally against the wind and waves, and in the catamaran, the upwind bow encounters the crest. It tries to rise over that crest, but the downwind bow, being so far away, wide hull spacing in the cat, is still trying to climb the face of the wave. And because of the structural integrity of the bridge deck between the two hulls, exhibiting that great resistance to global torsion, the downwind hull prevents the upwind hull from rising properly to that wave. It is still trying to rise up at the point in time when the downwind hull now encounters the crest, and it gives the entire vessel a double kick under the chin, and the bows of both hulls rise rather high. So we're talking about the time difference between each hull encountering the same wave. So now, as this same crest begins to pass under amidships toward the stern of the upwind hull, and that hull wants to drop down onto the back of the wave, it really can't because the downwind hull is still trying to climb. Both the bows and the sterns of both hulls are big and buoyant. Normally rather big transom sterns. The crest tries to get the upwind stern to rise. It can't because the downwind stern hasn't experienced the crest yet, and when it does, it gives the stern of the entire vessel a double kick in the butt, which can cause the bows to slam down rather hard on the back of the wave. Now, of course, I'm painting an exaggerated picture and it doesn't happen on every wave. But let's compare that now with the trimaran. When going to windward in a cruising-type trimaran, the upwind float is normally flying free of the surface, rather well above the surface in like 18 knots of wind. Right, trimarans heel more than cats. If you want to sail flat, get a catamaran. But this heeling allows the upwind hull of the trimaran to not experience the approaching crest. Instead, the main hull rises to the crest and is relatively free to do so because, one, the trimaran's downwind float hull is not so far away as in the case of the catamaran's lee hull, so the time difference is relatively brief, and furthermore, the trimaran's lee float stern is relatively very fine, narrow, and sharp compared to the catamaran's wide transom stern. And so, when the main hull bow rises to the crest, it can talk through global torsion to the lee float and tell the lee float's stern to depress, allowing the main hull's bow to rise more or less independently of its lee float. And now the crest passes under the middle of the main hull. It begins to drop down onto the back of the wave. And even though the lee float bow has not fully encountered the crest, it is relatively sharp and smaller than the bow of the lee hull in a catamaran. And so, because of the great resistance to global torsion provided by the platform, the main hull can actually tell the lee float bow to punch through the crest instead of climbing over. This is normal trimaran deportment. And the upshot is that the trimaran's main hull is relatively free to pick its own way through the seaway, relatively unrestrained by its upwind or its downwind outrigger float hull. And in some conditions, especially, it can make quite a difference in the comfort on board, the riding motion. Well, okay, I'm just trying to tell it as I see it. How about the difference in the accommodation plans between the catamaran and the trimaran? Here's where the catamaran really shines. Their main living space, the so-called saloon in sailor talk, is located in between the hulls, and this can be a grand space depending on the size of the vessel. It usually contains the dining area, the lounge space, the galley, and the navigation space all confined in one big room. And then the bunks and the baths are normally located in the outer hulls. And the real advantage here is that mom and pop can take one hull and put the kids or the guests in the other hull, and it is an unbeatable accommodation layout. Whereas in the trimaran, you can have, you know, the party and the bunk spaces and the galley fumes and the sounds in the sandbox all within earshot, if not eyesight. Now, that's not true of all trimaran designs. Some do make use of the accommodation spaces possible in the outer hulls, but it's a hard place to live underway. And some designs divide the accommodation space somewhere in amidships with the cockpit so that there's an aft cabin and a forward cabin. And this works rather well for serious seagoing, whereas living in the outer hulls underway, you know, out on the big briny, can be pretty noisy and rough. Now, to create these very different accommodation plans between the catamaran and the trimaran involves the distinction between their basic configurations. The catamaran's grand saloon is located in between the hulls in the bridge between the two hulls, and the floor in the saloon is the upper surface of the underwing panel. So to walk around in that saloon, you have your feet located, elevated, well above the surface of the water outside. Let's hope well above. And for one to stand up well above the water line implies a rather elevated cabin top. So elevated, in fact, that the cabins on many of today's popular production catamarans begins to resemble a school bus on deck. In fact, my friend Joe Hudson calls it the school bus effect. And in the smaller cats especially, anything below 50 feet, better yet 60 feet, the designer is obliged to lower the underwing panel closer to the water surface in order to reduce the elevation, the top hamper of the school bus. Top hamper being the weight and windage of the school bus itself. And that's why so many of today's popular catamarans, the smaller ones, have what I consider to be unacceptably low underwing clearance. And they can pound like the dickens, if indeed they're ever taken to sea, and many of their owners would never consider taking them to sea, although they have crossed oceans. For myself, I can't imagine living with the pounding. So if the yacht salesman tells you that this small catamaran has crossed oceans without any underwing pounding, you can use Dick Newick's favorite expletive, which is, "Oh, ballast." Now, that doesn't mean that trimarans can't pound. My old friend Walt Glazer used to say, "Trimarans don't pound except in pounding conditions." But the very presence of the trimaran's main hull, where the great expanse of the catamaran's underwing would be, really does reduce the effect of underwing pounding. And what's more, the trimaran seems to appeal to people who are coming out of monohulls. They can stand up in the middle of the boat with their feet down below the waterline without exaggerating the elevation of the superstructure in order to create standing headroom in the main saloon. Well, there's lots more to explore about the comparisons between catamarans and trimarans. For example, trimarans are conceptually better when tacking. They don't have to sweep two big deep hulls through the water when swinging through a turn, because the floats are properly mounted high enough so that they're practically skimming the water in the middle of the tack. But catamarans are conceptually better under power when maneuvering because of twin engines, one in each hull. You can literally turn the boat around in its own length. Trimarans have often shown to have superior windward performance, such as in clawing your way off of a lee shore, but in a catamaran with twin engines, you can handle that all right by turning on the engines. Catamarans seem to be better on the hard or on the beach. Trimarans on the beach can rock drunkenly from one float to the other by washing around in the slosh, whereas the catamaran will sit there like a sled. But I think there are more important differences between the two types regards their safety. Trimarans seem to get away with a little more murder in the case of collisions and shipwreck. If the trimaran has one of its floats bashed in by a freighter, it can still operate, as a proa, so to speak. And if it sails over a coral reef or a rock pile and tears out the bottom of its main hull, it will stay afloat on its floats, floating high enough, incidentally, to keep the wing bunks dry and the boat can still be operated in a fashion. Whereas a catamaran with one hull badly damaged, it's going to settle. The other hull, the whole vessel, is probably not going to sink, but she's going nowhere. But I happen to think that there's a considerable difference between the two types when capsized. Now, we've learned that frequency or likelihood of capsize in the cruising type of multihulls is extremely rare, certainly no more frequent or likely than it would be for a monohull of similar size and type to sink. And with either the cat or the tri, we've learned that the aftermath of capsizing is far preferred to the aftermath of sinking. In the case of sinking, the crew is definitely confined to a life raft, if indeed they have one. The boat has disappeared from the face of the earth. Whereas with the multihull, you've got a great raft that's going to stay afloat no matter what for weeks, months, years. But we've seen that there can be a considerable difference between the survivability, the habitability of a capsized catamaran relative to a capsized trimaran. Both types are even more stable when upside down than right side up. And if they're built, as usual, of buoyant materials, they cannot sink. There's no ballast trying to suck them out of sight. And with either type, when inverted, they create huge volumes of airlock in their hulls. They float very high. However, in the catamaran, if one were to open the escape hatches, which some are fitted with, or cut holes in the hull to allow living inside, that violates the airlock in the catamaran. That hull will settle too deep to inhabit. So the castaway crew is forced to live on the underwing, hopefully in a life raft that is thoroughly spider-webbed between the hulls so that the two cannot become separated. Whereas in the cruising trimaran, at least in many of them, one can inhabit the main hull by cutting a hole to allow access or having an escape hatch built in, and the boat probably will not settle too deep to permit habitation in the main hull because it's held up by airlock in its floats. In fact, there's one well-documented case of where the crew of three were able to live in the capsized trimaran for 4 months, where they had access to all the ship's stores, the fishing gear, the fresh water, and eventually they were even able to get the stove working. So I'm here to say that all aftermaths are not equal. The aftermath of sinking is very different than the aftermath of capsize in a catamaran is very different than the aftermath of collision, shipwreck, or capsize in a trimaran. And so, to conclude this tortuous tirade, why is it that catamarans are so much more popular than trimarans? I mean, there are some catamaran devotees who don't even think that trimarans are multi-hulls. They're something else. So, knowing what I know about the two types, it seems to me that the catamaran's popularity must be based largely on its marvelous accommodation plan. Most of us live most of the time in houses. And unless we spend a lot of time at sea, we would like for our boat to resemble a domicile. And let's face it, most cruising boats spend 99.9% of their time parked. And so, despite the catamaran's shortcomings, particularly the duplications that run the cost up astronomically, you know, two rudders, two centerboards, the jib stay spar between the bows and, of all things, twin engines, the cats are still better load carriers and they are more domicilic. Whereas the trimarans are for people who are really going to go somewhere. Generally speaking, they are smoother riding, more maneuverable under sail, more livable under sail, and in my view, more intuitive, easier to learn to sail. That is, when you see that lee float driving through the wave crests, you know it's about time to shorten sail or change course. I also think they are at least marginally safer than catamarans. They seem to come away from most of the seafaring calamities with a preferred aftermath. But you know, they say a good sailor can take a bad boat a long way. And so many of these comparisons I've tried to draw really do depend on the individual boat and the individual sailor. And these have all been objective comparisons, whereas the real choice of a boat is not objective. It's a subjective decision. Pick the boat that you can learn to love, because it's the new trade-off. If indeed it's fair to say that catamarans are better live-aboarders, then I also think it's fair to say that trimarans are better sea boats. There's something wrong with all of them, and if you can come to understand your boat, you will easily contend with its shortcomings. And as with many things, if you think she's really beautiful, you'll probably sail a long way together. Fair winds.